Brandon Spencer Hurdle with a briefing for us. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, everybody. It's really nice to see all of your faces, like you've mentioned, even if we're operating from a distance. Today, I'll be providing a short briefing that includes three areas that I'll be interested in getting the commission's feedback on, either today as sort of an initial gut check or in the next couple of weeks, related to the Historic Resources Code project and a few things that staff are considering that you haven't seen yet that would go into the next version of the project. I did want to say I had RIP and the Central City Plan at the end of my briefing today just to flag those things for you, and so I'm glad that we got that conversation started. But I thought I might just throw a few things into that discussion before I start my briefing, just so you have answers to a couple questions that were floating around a few minutes ago. I think it's great timing. You'll be at Council for your State of the City address in advance of Central City and RIP, and then later on this year, DOZA and HRCP, because you get an opportunity to give Council a better idea of what it is you've been working on, what your priorities are, and help them understand where you'll be coming from when you do present on those other projects. And it may be especially timely, since we have an election in a week, that may give us some indications on what the new City Council will look like or not look like. And so you'll be in an interesting moment at Council just to refresh them and refresh candidates and or to be elected officials about what work you do. So I think just remembering that context that you have a couple of council members who are still newer and you may have other council members who are will be seated in the future who may be paying attention. So it's pretty timely opportunity for you. So I'll be excited to listen and hear what you have to say. Regarding Central City, yep.
Can I just break in with a question about that? This is Kristen. So is it your understanding that if there are new candidates who get elected on May 19th, that those commissioners would potentially be part of the Zoom meeting?
That's a good question. I'm not the expert here, and I did see there was an attendee from the mayor's office who was here, so if someone else can chime in and answer this definitively, go for it. But my understanding is for the seat that Commissioner Fish held, that vacancy, if there's a candidate who gets more than half of the vote and that vote is certified, my understanding is that that person would then subsequently take office. For the other council seats, even if a candidate gets 50% of the vote, that term doesn't start until the new calendar year. But my understanding is that for commissioners, Fish's seats, since that is that's a vacancy, that's filled on a quicker schedule if a candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. If there's not a candidate that gets more than 50%, there's a runoff election, I believe in August, but I'm not the expert on that.
Okay, thank you.
So jumping back to your questions about Central City, City Council will be holding one hearing on Central City 2035 readoption. The code and map package that's in front of them will be the same as what was adopted back in May of 2018, which includes a variety of things that this commission has talked about at length, such as the historic resource FAR transfer, height adjustments in four historic districts, and specifically height adjustments in the new Chinatown-Japantown historic district, both adjustments up and down. In their hearing, they'll certainly be hearing from people about the actual sort of specifics of the height changes in new Chinatown-Japantown as it relates to the remand from the Ladies Board of Appeals. But they'll also be talking about the legislative findings that back up their decision-making. And those findings are essentially the council's interpretation and application of the comprehensive plan goals and policies. And so what you'll likely hear quite a bit of discussion about at that hearing and maybe where you'll go with your testimony has to do with the findings that make the case or lay the groundwork for decisions in the zoning code and on the zoning map. But just as a preview, council, the package in front of council does not include additional adjustments to the height from what was adopted 2 years ago. It will include revised findings and my understanding is that the intention is to have those findings available to the public in advance of that hearing so that comments can go be made both on the substance of the zoning code and zoning map, as well as the findings that the draft findings that council may put out there. But that that timing is, I'm not certain on that timing, but my understanding is by the time of the hearing, the public would have access to those findings and could make comments on them. My understanding is also that the record will remain open for several weeks after the hearing. And so there'll be the ability to submit additional comments in writing. And the council will have a work session and first reading sometime in June, and then a second reading at the end of June for an adoption, readoption of new code language sometime in July. So if there's not any other questions on that, I'll jump into the briefing. But if there are any other residential info project or Central City questions, feel free to give me a ring or ask me at the end of the briefing. So I'm going to share my screen here for a PowerPoint. Let's see if it works. Funny, I have done screen sharing several times and it is not letting me do it now. Hold on.
There we go.
Great. Can everyone see that okay?
Yeah.
Perfect. So today I plan to just give a quick update on historic resource code projects to give you a better sense of where we're at. Like I said, I've got three areas that are things that we haven't discussed as a group before, and I would like the commission's feedback on it, either as a, so like I said, so some initial thoughts today or in a response back to me. I wouldn't need that response to be a formal memo. You'd be welcome to do that if you want. But I did want to flag three things for the commission and give you the opportunity to give me some initial feedback about where we're where the BPS staff are thinking we're going to go, just so I can take that under advisement as we roll out our proposed draft this summer. Just as a quick refresher, I know we have one commissioner who's newer, and for those who are attendees on the call, the Historic Resource Code Project is a zoning code amendments project. We are looking to make changes to the text of the zoning code, but not add or remove any historic landmarks or historic districts citywide. Those are resources that are designated on the zoning map, and the code project is really looking at the specific regulations for inventorying, designating, protecting, and reusing historic resources. Another thing that the Historic Resource Code Project won't be doing is changing state regulations, like the owner consent for historic designation law that exists in Oregon, or making changes to the way National Register resources are protected upon designation in state law. So those, neither of those things are being changed with the Historic Resource Code Project. But what the code project is seeking to do is to sort of update and bring into compliance our city's historic resource overlay zone and the protections that go along with it. Which include proposals for new demolition regulations for locally designated resources, new exemptions from historic resource review for minor exterior alterations and related new construction, enhanced incentives for the reuse and rehabilitation of historic resources, as well as a framework for future historic resource inventory updates. I won't go into any great detail about those, but just wanted to give those who are listening in a sort of a general flavor of what it is that the project is seeking to do. Just a quick timeline for where we've been and where we're going. In early 2019, we held a series of public events to develop concepts about where we may look at zoning code changes. We took those concepts and put them into a discussion draft. It was reviewed in the first couple quarters of 2020. For those of you who have been on the commission for some time, you remember that the legislature in 20, that's not true. That was February through June 2019. I'm sorry for the typo. 2019. So for those of you who have been on the commission for some time, you'll remember that the legislature was considering some potential changes to the state approach to historic resource protection and designation in the 2019 session. Those changes did not come to fruition. And so between the public comments that we received during that open review time period, and the fact that the legislature left intact the system that existed before. We went to work reviewing those comments and developing a proposed draft. We had intended to release that proposed draft in winter or spring of 2020. And just to be transparent with the commission, the staff capacity to put those amendments together has been pretty limited the last 8 to 10 months. That's due in part to the variety of other planning projects that are making their way through the legislative process, like the design overlay zone amendments, residential infill, central city programs that, just to be honest, have taken me away from the code writing and editing process. We also recently, our great intern, Carrie Franey, took a job at ODOT, and so we're down staff to make headway on this stuff. We are hoping to release the proposed draft of the Historic Resource Code project in July or August, and so that's not too long in the future, after which time there'd be a hearing before the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and then the Planning and Sustainability Commission would hold one or two work sessions to consider amendments to the proposed draft and then make their recommendation to City Council. Another thing I didn't put on this timeline that we're considering is that the City Council agenda and ability to consider these bigger land use projects is pushing us out into late 2020, early 2021 before they'd be able to consider this project. And the way that the sequencing is looking is that the design overlay zone amendments would leave the Planning and Sustainability Commission, Historic Resource Code Project would land on their desk, and then City Council would get Historic Resource Code Project after finishing their work on amendments to the Design Overlay Zone Amendments Project. And so we're sort of sequencing with Design Overlay Zone Amendments and not wanting to get to Planning and Sustainability Commission or to City Council until they finish their discussion and review of that package of amendments. Not because there's a direct link between the two, but because we're looking to have sort of manageable bites of changes to the zoning code. And so that's our general timeline. What that means is that means I'll be back before the commission again in the summer, to be determined based upon the PSC agenda setting and when we release the proposed draft, to walk the commission through each of the proposed changes, to give you an opportunity to have a work session amongst yourself to prepare for testimony to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and then give the Planning and Sustainability Commission a really good insight into where you're at, where you think that the code changes are going the right direction, where you have concerns, and we'll have to cross a bridge about how the Planning and Sustainability Commission will best engage with you as they go through their work session process. We may ask one or more commissioners to come and sit in on those PSC hearings to give some context and better understanding. We may extend the open record period for the Landmarks Commission to have some back and forth. We're gonna see how things play out with DOZA to learn what's best practice when having one of the BDS commissions engaging with a legislative proposal that touches on directly on your work. So that's TBD, but it's something for us to be thinking. In an ideal world, we'll have this here in the summer for public review, and then specifically for this commission to really spend some time understanding the proposals and coming to conclusions about where you think that you would advise PSC to go with those recommendations. In the course of our review of the public comments and discussions that have happened subsequently, there are three topic areas where staff will be proposing going a little different direction, or we're thinking about proposing a little different direction than where we've gone in the discussion draft and in some of our conversations before. And the three areas that I'd just like to flag for the commission now in hopes of getting some feedback from you in the next, let's say, month, 3 weeks to a month, either formal or informal, are around how demolition review is conducted, and then two exemptions, one for solar panels in historic districts and another for detached accessory structures in historic districts. And I'll give a little context about each of them. But those are three areas where upon review of the public testimony received and upon review of where we think from a planning perspective at BPS we might best go, these are three areas that I'd love your feedback on. So the first topic has to do with demolition review. In the discussion draft that went out for public review, staff had proposed a new type 2 staff level review for demolition of contributing structures in conservation districts, as well as conservation landmarks. And that would be a drastic change from our current approach where we apply a demolition delay in our conservation districts. Staff had proposed a type 2 staff level review with approval criteria that were similar to, but a little different than what exists today in the type 4 city council demolition review. The feedback we received from the public was pretty overwhelmingly opposed to that staff level review. I myself, and I think some of my colleagues, found that testimony to be pretty convincing, that a type 2 staff level review may not provide the opportunity for public transparency and comments that a conservation landmark or a significant resource in a conservation district might deserve. And more compelling, and this we're gonna get into some weeds here, more compelling was that state administrative rule requires that resources listed in the National Register that are proposed for demolition do get a public hearing when demolition is considered, meaning that a place like Peacock Lane, which is now on the National Register, does have a demolition review for its contributing resources, and that state law says that that review has to be in a public forum. And we received some pretty convincing testimony that if a place like Peacock Lane wanted to seek a conservation district status on top of its National Register status, that a type 2 review would be at odds with that public hearing expectation of National Register listing. And so what I and my colleagues at BPS are landing on is a new type 3 review that would go to the Historic Landmarks Commission for the proposed demolition of a conservation landmark, contributing building in a conservation district, or the proposed demolition of a resource in a National Register district that was listed after 2017. What that would mean is that the Landmarks Commission would take on a new role reviewing demolitions of resources in areas that are not a historic landmark or historic district. So City Council would continue to see the things that City Council has been seeing for the last 15 or so years. Proposed demolitions in places like the Alphabet Historic District or a proposed demolition of a landmark, a historic landmark. But those things that are subject to the 120-day demolition delay today in conservation districts would go to the Historic Landmarks Commission for that hearing, and resources in newly listed National Register districts that haven't been subsequently designated at the local level would be a type three review. We're looking at approval criteria that would generally be the same as the type 4 review, but in sort of the hierarchy of the importance of the resources, I think the public testimony for me has been convincing that having a public hearing for demolition of a designated resource makes a lot of sense, but that resources in conservation districts or places that are on the National Register but have not been designated as a historic district or landmark may not warrant the attention of City Council through a type 4 review. And then resources on the inventory would still be subject to a demolition delay, no hearing, no review. So maybe I'll look to Chair Miner to tell me if you'd like me to walk through each of these three areas that I'd like your feedback on, and then come back and talk about them or talk about each one individually. And I think, Chair Miner, you're muted.
Thank you. This is Kristen. And just in response to your question, I do think this could warrant some discussion. So it might be useful for us to just talk about this for a minute. I'm not sure all the commissioners really, first off, understand what the type 4 demolition review criteria entail, because it's a big shift, you know, in what we're used to seeing. And so I guess my first question for you, Brandon, is, you know, how much are those criteria modeled on the type 4? You know, what are they taking from that you're saying, you know, they're kind of similar?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chair Miner. Almost everything is being translated, would be translated between the type 3 and the type 4. And that's in large part because the state admin rule now says that when a National Register resource, whether it was designated in the past or in the future, is proposed for demolition, the local government has to hold a hearing. They can hold a hearing with whatever review body they want. And when they hold that hearing, they have to have consider the types of factors that are currently embedded in our approval criteria. So you're thinking about consistency with the comprehensive plan, you're thinking about economic hardship, you're thinking about the value of the replacement project to the community. Those are all things that the state admin rule says whoever the review body is need to consider. And one of the things that we heard in the public feedback was that resources and conservation districts, because they're designated and because they may in the future or even today be listed in the National Register, would warrant the same level of consideration in the approval criteria. But because of their, let's say, depth of significance potentially, or the level of other types of protections that apply, that it may not be the right thing for City Council to spend their time looking at. In the sense of City Council's busy, City Council, really should be asked to review the most significant resources that are proposed for demolition, which at the staff level, we've sort of thought those things that are at that historic landmark, historic district level are probably the things that are most appropriate for City Council to spend their time looking at.
This is Kristen again. Well, thank you. That's a good explanation. So I guess just trying to wrap my head around the shift then, like especially in conservation districts, so we would essentially be going from, zero review. I mean, demo delay is not a review, to a full type 3 review for contributing structures, right?
That's the proposal that we're imagining right now.
I mean, I think that's potentially a win for preservation, but I also think that, we really have to weigh, like, is this the time, are we gonna really anger some people? I wanna know sort of what the level of opposition might be against it.
Yeah, that's a good question. We did send send a mailed notice a year ago to all owners in conservation districts to let them know that there were code amendments on the table and that one of those amendments would add a demolition review to their properties. And those people were given the ability, those owners were given the ability to comment. We did receive a few comments, both directions from people.
Okay.
Type 3 we didn't get into the nuance of the level of review.
This is Hillary, just a quick comment. Brandon, you are proposing to come back for a workshop, right? Where we'll have a few hours to discuss the details of all these proposed changes.
I am, and that would only happen after the publication of the proposed draft.
Okay. I just wanted to try to keep this at a higher level briefing, because there is definitely plenty to discuss. And just to make sure that you could get through the rest of your stuff in a reasonable amount of time. Because we only spent an hour today.
So, yep. And I think we can move through it. I think this is I wanted to use this opportunity to give the commission a heads up before we put the final touches on a proposed draft that went out for full public review, including detailed review by this commission. In the event that we were going down a road that this commission felt strongly was the wrong one, or had some last considerations for staff before we, we pen something that's out for public review. And there were these three areas are the areas that I thought this commission would probably want to know about before we send something out.
This is Kristen. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think I don't necessarily need to go further into the demolition review discussion right now. But if anyone else would like to make a comment, please do.
Yeah, I have a question. This is Commissioner Smith. Just so I'm straight in my head, because I haven't been on the commission for a type 4. Type 4 is decided at council, but comes in front of Landmarks Commission ahead of that as the public hearing step in the process?
Close. The Landmarks Commission pens a letter to the City Council, and the City Council holds the final hearing and deliberations and makes a decision. Okay. And so you, when a type four comes through, the Landmarks Commission is consulted and you do make a recommendation to council.
Okay. So the type four process in this current proposal, the type four process remains the same.
Yeah.
The demolition review becomes a type three for us, and the criteria essentially mirror that of the type four.
That's right. Essentially, you, for this conservation level resources and newly listed National Register, you would become the decision-making body.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Any other questions on this? And like I said, I don't need the feedback today. I would be happy to get it in a few weeks or not at all if you don't have any as a commissioner individuals. With that, I'll move on to the second one. One of the things that we heard a lot from the public, and this is public who live in historic districts and public who don't, was concern about limitations on solar panels in historic districts. And so for a quick refresher for commissioners, currently a property owner could propose to install a solar installation on their roof in a historic or conservation district. In historic districts, that would go through historic resource review and be considered within the approval criteria for that district. But for the last 8 years, well, I think 7 years, we've allowed for some rear-facing solar panels to be exempt from historic resource review. Those rear-facing panels have to be parallel to the roof, set back at least a foot from ridges and edge lines, and not project more than a foot off of the roof. In the discussion draft of Historic Resource Fund Project, staff proposed allowing a little bit more roof area to be covered with solar, but required those panels to be a little tighter to the roof. So we were proposing to allow solar to come close to covering rear-facing roof slopes. We heard a lot of feedback from the public, including some pretty strong feedback from Lads Edition and Irvington, that staff should be more aggressive in allowing solar panels exempt from review in historic district. And one of those areas that staff considered was allowing solar panels on all roof slopes of detached accessory structures set in the back of the lot, which were, I think somewhat convinced of, though I'm not sure how often that would occur given sort of tree canopy and the lower nature of those detached accessory structures. But BPS staff are considering a proposal to allow certain solar panels on rear and side facing roof slopes in historic districts exempt from review. And so this would be a pretty big change from the current condition where staff generally in a type two review would look at solar panels that are on side facing roof slopes. But we did get a lot of testimony about allowing for solar panels on those side facing roof slopes. Did not get a lot of testimony, a few pieces, but not a lot on street facing solar. So if you had a hip roof or a side facing gable roof, I don't think staff are convinced that allowing it on street facing slope is the right way to go. But given the testimony and given sort of the struggle other cities are having with this conversation around solar, I think BPS staff are increasingly convinced that in the proposed draft, allowing for a more aggressive approach to solar panels on side facing roof slopes may be appropriate to balance comprehensive plan policies. We haven't landed on this. The ink is not dried on this proposal, but it was one I wanted to flag for the commission just to know that staff are thinking about it. I myself am increasingly convinced that there may be a path here that could resolve some of those public comments and not diminish integrity of resources. We wanted to hear from you. We did get a request, and this has come up from several people, including Bureau Development Services, to allow for solar shingles in historic districts. And I remain unconvinced that allowing solar shingles without seeing them is we're quite ready for that. But that may be in the future. But the PV panels on side facing roof slopes, it's interesting to see, like, the Urban and Community Association did take a position on this split vote, asking us to think about it. So that was a different approach than where they've been at the last time these questions were asked at the policy level.
Brandon, this is Kristen. Can I just interrupt to ask what that means for a corner lot?
I don't think staff have landed on a answer for that yet. Where my current draft is that if you're, you you would not, we would not be exempting solar that's facing a street, whether that's a building on a corner or not. So that would be essentially to say, if it's side or rear lot facing and you were tight against the roof, maybe exempt. But if you were street facing on either street on a corner, not so much.
Okay. And then just one more follow-up question. I know you said quite tight to the slope of the roof. What are you toying with in terms of, you know, what that means? Like, is it no more than a foot off or?
Even narrower, we're looking at 8 inches.
Okay.
Parallel to the roof.
Okay, thank you. I think I'm generally, you know, leaning, yes, I wanna do some, you know, frankly, I wanna do some neighborhood walks, you know, with that in mind.
They're easier, it's a weird thing, you know, you do your neighborhood walk in January and you come to one conclusion, and then you do your neighborhood walk in May and you come to another based upon the tree canopy. It's a tough one. So I've been wrestling with this. I know Hillary's wrestled with this, BDS has wrestled with it. And I think that BPS staff are coming to some conclusions based upon the testimony received. Okay. The last topic that I want the commission to at least know about or consider, and this may be this may be one that the commission has a stronger opinion on, or maybe not. We'll see. Today, in historic districts, detached accessory structures go through historic resource review. Generally, this is when someone is proposing a new backyard ADU or a new garage or shed. Current regulations allow for those to go through historic resource review. The code currently exempts detached accessory structures that are 200 square feet or less. So that's probably smaller than a dwelling unit, maybe in the area of sort of garage or shed sized. And that exemption doesn't require any kind of compatibility for exterior siding or windows or roof slope. We've heard a lot of testimony about allowing for additional housing opportunity in historic districts, and a lot of testimony from people who are looking to build detached accessory dwelling units or a new garage or shed in their backyards, primarily in Irvington and Lads Addition. And we are sort of tooling with our review thresholds for what level of review new detached accessory structures would fall into. But one idea that's gained some traction based upon the testimony we received and the desire to allow historic districts to evolve and grow without hurting their historic integrity is to maybe allow for a larger detached accessory structure to be exempt from historic resource review if it met a series of standards. So it would be essentially something between the free allowance for something up to 200 square feet and where review kicks in. That might look something like allowing a larger detached accessory structure exempt from review if it was no wall was longer than 24 feet in length, if the building was no taller than 15 feet to the midpoint of a gable roof, the siding matched a contributing resource, and not allowed on a landmark site. I'm not sure that's all the right standards to apply to it, but we have been hearing from a number of people sort of broadly speaking, that one thing that they would like to get out of the historic resource code improvements is a streamlined path to allow some housing that's small and that has a benign effect on historic districts without review. One thing I didn't put in these conditions and I should have is that as we've sort of thought about this and this applies to the 200 square foot accessory structure exemption that exists today is no closer than 40 feet to a street. So we're not thinking this would be things that are proud of a building. This would be the kind of thing that's in the backyard. I don't know if this is the right path. I don't know that we're gonna necessarily go down this path, but we are talking about it. I've been playing around with some of this code language the last couple of weeks to see if we can get somewhere that might work and might not have a disastrous effect on historic districts. This is not something we're thinking about for landmark sites or areas that are, you know, sort of not residential districts.
This is Kristen, and I think that in some ways I'm open to the idea of having kind of a process for sort of pre-review of structures that, you know, could go within historic districts or something. But I'm frankly pretty, I'm not super excited about a structure this big without review. I don't know, I'd love to hear what the rest of you think. Anybody?
So when, this is Commissioner Smith, when it comes to an item like no wall longer than 24 feet, does that mean that the structure can't be any bigger than 24 by 24 in footprint?
That's right.
Okay.
And that is a maximum. So if you like the example that's shown in the bottom, you might be 15 by 24, or you might be 12 by 24, but no, you can't, no side of the footprint can be longer than 24. And the reason I threw that number out there, and I don't know that it's the right one, is that that's the standard that exists for allowing a detached accessory structure in a setback. And so if you have a detached accessory structure that's 24 by 24 or smaller, you can locate that structure within your rear or side property setback.
Got it.
Go ahead, Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, I was going to say, much like the solar panel issue, where I think we need to, you know, walk the talk of sustainability in its complete sense. So we should, you know, we should be willing to go as far as we can with things like that. I think we kind of need to take the same approach, or at least I take this a similar approach to density, where I can see expanding the exempt, you know, the types of ADRs or accessory structures that are exempt to a degree beyond where they are now. I'm not sure where that line is for me at this point, but.
Can I chime in? Commissioner Roman here. I having done a number of 24 by 24 foot garages on the property line, what you end up with is a fire rated wall with no openings in it. And so I do have concerns. You can't live in those. Typically you have to be 3 foot back for living space, but you do create a pretty onerous wall for your neighbor, typically done in CMU or something like that. So I would tend towards more review than less in historic districts is my personal feeling.
Oh, Commissioner Femayor here. I was a little concerned also on the materials and say those siding matching, but I'm assuming that it will be some more clear guidelines for property owners. In that case, if there won't be any reviews, so they will be easier, or there will be some kind of easier path for them to get through the structures, whatever size it comes out to be at the end. So the process is not for them to go back and forth with, well, they have to be matching, but what do you mean matching? It's the same material, just the same style, or all this kind of guidelines that will help, and just kind of maybe going a little bit farther in what the code will say, but I just think it should be something connecting with the guidelines in there.
I'm glad you said that, Commissioner. That's been one of the biggest challenges thinking about a standards type approach is you know, that the materials that are used on a Peacock Lane are pretty different than a material palette that's used in Irvington or South Portland Historic District. And so one of the challenges I've faced is if we go down this road of a detached accessory structure exemption and we do it for all of our residential districts, I kept thinking that the best thing to to find compatibility with is the associated contributing structure, and that could have a variety of different materials, brick or stucco or lap siding or drop siding. And so I wrestled with this a little bit, and that's a good question that's still open in my mind about how we could get there if we go down this road.
And sometimes the resource doesn't have the original siding. Right. So, you know, if it's been finished with something else and then the owner's like, well, you know, underneath this asbestos shingles, I have really nice horizontals, but you know,
And that's why I thought the if it's contributing, it probably has either its original siding or an appropriate siding. And the thing I should say too is this wouldn't preclude an owner from going through a historic resource review to do something that's different, uses a different material, hits a different height, is longer than 24 feet on one of its edges. It's like I'm trying to think about, is there appetite or an approach that would say, here's almost your pre-approved, if you do this, you want to build a dwelling in your backyard, you're in a historic district and you do these things, you're compatible enough and your effect on the district is minimal enough that you can get through without a review. And then a review would trigger if you're larger trying to do something different. And I should say too, for those of you who don't work in this world every day, accessory dwelling units can be up to 800 square feet. And so as I've thought about this, I'm almost envisioning sort of the, you do what you want up to 200 feet. Is there some size that's 300, 400, 500 square feet that there's a standards option if you want it, and then you get kicked into a review at the upper end?
My concern over the 24 foot by 24 foot is that is larger than, you know, most of the accessory structures in a neighborhood like Irvington. So you're by right allowing a new type, pattern type that doesn't exist in the district, and people will build to it basically. So I don't know, maybe I'm not against not having a review. It's just that seems like a really large accessory structure to me.
And Commissioner, to the extent that you have time or thoughts, email them along with me if you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and think like, 18 by 20 is the right answer, because I could use that guidance.
All
right, go ahead. No, I just was going to agree with, this is Commissioner Mahoney, is going to agree with Commissioner Roman on that point, and then also just support the solar panel exemption, because I also think that, as Commissioner Smith noted, we should be walking the talk about sustainability. Sorry, I interrupted you, Commissioner Roman.
Oh, that's all right. I think I might have interrupted you, so thank you. I'll get back to you, Brandon. I think, just my own experience, that's a pretty good size 2-car garage, which if they sprouted up on every lot, would really change the feel and the character of that neighborhood. So I think there's got to be a compromise somewhere between that size and I see where you get it, because it's right in the code now in terms of buildings that are exempt in the setback. So.
And one thing I'll say, a minor benefit of working at home is it's a little rental house I live in. I'm looking out my window at an alley in Loud's Addition that has a variety of garage conditions happening, contributing and non-contributing. And it is interesting on the ground. You're right, Matthew, that some districts have a pretty typical pattern of detached structures. Other ones are a little all over the map.
Well, you have the benefit of the alley system in Laz that most of Portland doesn't have either. So the garages can be accessed and not quite as, noticed from the street, so to speak. So, all right, thank you.
Any other initial thoughts? And like I said, this is just I wanted to flag this stuff to give the commission the opportunity to get back to me in the next, 3 weeks or month with your individual or collective thoughts. But anything else on this one?
This is Commissioner Foti. I concur with Commissioner Mahoney and Commissioner Roman on their comments. I just had to share my feelings about it, I guess. So with RIP coming up, I guess the question is, ordinarily, it just sounds like there's gonna be a lot of density happening with this RIP floating around. I guess the question is I don't have a really good understanding. Are we talking that we may potentially see this larger types of structures popping up everywhere in historic districts without historic review all of a sudden because of the RIP impact, versus sort of a case by case minimal basis? I just, don't know what to expect, because it definitely seems disconcerting to have larger sizes. And then you've got different lots, different views. It almost just seems better to have oversight, especially with potentially a lot more of this type of construction coming around the corner. Is that fair?
It's a good question. Today in an Irvington or Lads addition, you can do an accessory dwelling unit up to 800 square feet. And so we do see those proposals come in. I look to BDS to talk more about their experience with buildings at that size. And while RIP will allow for more units, there's only so much backyard area. So we do today allow for 800 square foot ADU. RIP would allow for multiple detached ADUs, but there's size limitations to that. And so you might see, today a proposal might come in for one 800 square foot building, and tomorrow under RIP, you might see a proposal for two 400 square foot, or you might see, some different site arrangements that are proposed. But, we see interest today for backyard ADUs at the larger end of the scale. That's not always get approved, but. And I think too, just for me just to get a sense of why this is being flagged is, I think in the public testimony, and I think in the read of the room citywide, there's great interest in seeing historic districts have the opportunity to add density, and that there may be some benign ways to do that, that maybe we can find a path to get to a quicker approval. This may not be the right one, but email me with your thoughts.
Can I add one last comment? Matthew Roman here. The state, the 2001 measure that is going to basically allow multiple houses on every single family lot would also play into this discussion, would it not?
It would. So the city that HB21 is in administrative rulemaking, and residential infill project is our local vehicle that'll implement that. In residential infill project, it would allow the multiple dwelling units in all the historic districts. So that's the way that the proposal is on the table. The housing units would be allowed whether you're in or out of a historic district based upon your underlying zoning. Historic district obviously has the additional levels of review that this commission sees come through.
All right, thank you.
In the interest of being on time, if it's okay with the commission, I'm gonna move to my last slide here just to finish up, which is sort of moving us away. But we'll invite and would love the feedback directly to me or from the commission as a whole as I work to finish the code writing. So I'll be wrapping up in the next month or 6 weeks, the code editing in advance of releasing that proposed draft this summer. The hearing dates are still to be determined. We do have hearing dates on the PSC's tentative agenda. At this point, it's unlikely that we'll be able to meet those hearing dates, and so we're probably pushing it to August for our Planning and Sustainability Commission hearings. I would be back in front of the commission when we do release that proposed draft to really spend some time to walk through all the proposals. Get your initial feedback to create an environment where you could have a work session so that you have the opportunity to go to the Planning Commission and really walk through with them the highlights of where you are having some concerns about the staff proposal, where you're feeling supportive of it, and then ultimately engage the PSC as they go through their process to make a recommendation to City Council. So this is where I'm at in the process, and now would be a great opportunity for commissioners or the commission as a whole to give me any last thoughts that you have before that staff a proposed draft comes out this summer. Chair Minor, commissioners, anything else?
I would like to add one very quick comment about just the, the size of ADUs that might be allowed without review. And I guess I wanted to remind commissioners that, we've started really pushing for the idea that we're talking about context in terms of volumetric thinking rather than just, sort of floors or, even FAR. And so, I think we're all grappling with the ideas of, what's appropriate and where. So I'd like you all, as you take your walks, out in various neighborhoods, think about, whether a 24 by 24 box that's 15, feet high, is that the most appropriate volume? And maybe we should be, sort of pushing for almost a smaller footprint and let people go a little bit higher. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know quite how I feel about this yet, but I would like you all to think about this as you, you know, look around and sort of peer in people's backyards to see what's built.
I've studied this myself for clients and showing them a volumetric of what, you know, what a shape like that looks like in their backyard is often quite revealing to them. And it's, I would agree with you, in some cases, the height limit works against you because, you know, you like to match the pitch of the roof of the house, but you can't because that would take you over a limit. You end up with, you know, the client's program is dictating the volume that they want, and you're trying to make it look appropriate within that. So I can tell you that 24 by 24 by 15 is not, it's not a very traditional aspect ratio for a, you know, most garages or outbuildings in most of the historic neighborhoods. It's, you know, maybe you get into the 50s or something, and you start to see that. But I think I don't have a problem with building larger structures. It's just the review that might be required because, like I said, no penetrations on the property line is a pretty austere view for your neighbor. If you don't go over and talk to them, you can that could be the end of your neighborly relationship. So, and it could be a historic property next door. I don't know. It's just every condition is unique, and I'm concerned that that's too big of a box to let someone drop down wherever they feel like it with no review. Anyway, I probably said too much.
This is Commissioner Mahoney, and I would agree with that, and that context is so important for making those decisions. I can't imagine saying that a certain dimension and height of a volume is going to, you know, because people are just going to go for as much as they can get, I would think. So it's not going to be appropriate in, you know, every case.
Yeah.
With that too.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. You know, I think if it were to, you know, if it were to be palatable to me, it would have to really address a lot of those other elements of context. You know, it can only be X percent of the open, you know, backyard area, and it can only be X percent of the, you know, of the, I don't know, the roof line of the house, the main structure. It's like, it's gotta be like an exhaustive list of things, I think, for us to start to get comfortable with saying that it's exempt, which is, you know, kind of, Chair Minor, what we ran into with DOZA, which is like, you know, once you start doing a standards-based code, it's like, where do you, you know, what condition haven't we thought of yet? And right. You got to add a standard for that.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone, you know, Brandon is asking for our comments, so feel free to just shoot him an email, and, you know, even if you don't necessarily have the answer, you know, try to give this some serious thought and give him some feedback. I will do the same.
This discussion has been really helpful for me, so thanks for making the extra time for it and giving me the your initial thoughts, your gut check on these three things, and follow up with me in the next month if you can.
I do have one more question, if I may, about process. With DOZA, Chair Minor and I testified in front of a joint commission between PSC and Design Commission. You talked about us testifying to PSC. Is it not going to follow a similar type of procedure as DOZA did?
Yeah, good question. So Design Commission and Historic Landmarks Commission both have a role in the code to recommend to City Council design guidelines. And so when we come to this commission with, for example, the update to the South Portland Historic District guidelines, you will be the recommending body to council. PSC is the recommending body to council for any code text changes. DOZA had that joint hearing as a matter of efficiency, since the Design Commission went off and worked on their design guidelines. Planning Commission went off and worked on the design standards. They're both recommending bodies for a part of the DOZA project. In this case, the Planning and Sustainability Commission, by virtue of their code ordain responsibilities, they will be the recommending body on this and not the Landmarks Commission. So it'll look a little different in that the Landmarks Commission doesn't have a formal recommendation role in the legislative process.
Okay. So mechanically, it is actually different.
It is. But we'll be checking in once DOZA's on its way out the door. We'll be checking with the PSC leadership to see how they'd like to bring you all in for their discussions. Since I think that everybody would benefit from and is wanting to have that joint collaboration.
Okay. Thanks, Brandon.
So I want to finish just by asking for everyone to help me out with these upcoming National Register reviews. I sent an email a couple days ago. I'm just going to talk about the first few bullet points. You can read them up there and ask if you want to any questions. But on June 1st, the commission will be considering 5 National Register reviews. June 1st is a really busy day for the commission, so we're going to keep those reviews to something close to lightning speed, which I don't always love doing, but I think you're in a bind that day and we'll need to go quickly. And so we've got 5, I think, all interesting, some extremely interesting National Register nominations. One is for a downtown commercial building, another is a mid-century building on the Inner East Side. One is a brick building that many people are probably familiar with on Southeast Division and 81st. We've got the Darcel Club, and then we have a garage reclassification in Lads. I've heard from Tina and Andrew about which ones they'd be interested in taking, but I would like to get commissioners, at least one, ideally 2 commissioners, to serve as lead reviewers for each of these nominations. I think we're probably good with the downtown commercial building, but we could use reviewers for all the other nominations. Chair Miner is conflicted out on the Darcel Showplace, so they won't be able to review that one, but I would love it either verbally today or in an email. If each commissioner is willing to take on 1 or 2 of these, that would be really great. And the Lads Garage reclassification is probably the least sexy, but I would love some astute eyes on that one too.
This is Commissioner Foti. I'm happy to take on anyone. If you could assign me one, that'd be the best. Whatever nobody else wants, I'm happy to take on.
Can you take the credit union and the old people's home?
Sure.
Cool.
Commissioner Spears, is Darcel still available?
It is, but I also want to give you the credit union if I can.
Gotcha. I can do the same thing. You can assign whatever.
I'd give you, Commissioner Spears, Darcel's and the credit union, because I know you've got a fondness for mid-century, and I think your eyes on the credit union would be pretty cool, if you're willing.
Perfect.
Commissioner Mahoney, I was hoping to look at the credit union, but I could look at anything else.
Commissioner Mahoney, would you be willing to look at the credit union and the Lads Garage?
Sure.
So I know, I'm taking on the old people's home then, right? Not the credit union.
Old people's home, I think I'd love to get the extra eyes on the credit union.
Okay.
And I say that because there's a pretty interesting comparative analysis that happens there. And we have so few mid-century resources that I think will be a helpful one to get a couple eyes on.
Okay, perfect. I just want to make sure. So I'll still credit union and old people's home. Got it.
What are you assigning to me, Brandon? Because I have said DevSale and Postal with credit union. So now you're...
That's right.
That's everybody. And I'm just like, I'm sure.
I forgot about Tina taking that. You know, Maya, if you were willing, I thought I just said that, but Tina reminded me that she had already committed to the credit union. Maya, would you be willing to do old people's home and the garage?
Definitely. I'll take those 2.
Okay. That works.
I'm available, Brandon, if there's something you want me to look at.
Would you give us a review of someone, if I'm doing my math wrong here? I think everyone has 2 people assigned, I think. But Matthew, if you'd be willing to look at Darcel's and pick another one, if you can. I think we'll be even. I think we're good on all the reviews at that point.
Brandon, this is Hillary. Who has the new Fleetner building?
Tina.
Okay.
And
I did that one.
And Brandon, I don't have an assignment. I'm very happy to do anything if you want, if you still need reviewers, no problem.
Kristen, maybe you could just pick one that's of interest to you and we'll get there and do it. And again, the idea is since we get so many of these, in an ideal world, everybody would read all of them and we could have a lengthy discussion, but I know time is tight. So the more eyes, the better. And this, like I said, is a really interesting group. So I think you can't go wrong.
Okay.
Great. Well, that is all I've got for today. Thank you for letting me run over. I appreciate it, Hillary. And on June 1st, I am endeavoring to spend 20 minutes on each nomination, which might be tough, but we're going to try to do it.
Okay.
And this is Hillary. I just have one more thing to note. Next Monday, you have the briefing for the Southwest Corridor Conceptual Design Report. You received that packet of information back in March that was supposed to be on March 23rd. I believe that the appeal on Northeast 8th, that was also supposed to be on March 23rd. So you have the information for that too somewhere. If you don't, that information is available online and you can access it through the links on the agenda. So just to refresh your memory. That's it for me.
Okay. Anybody else have any last comments before we wrap it up? No?
I just wanted to say that it was a nice meeting and I just glad to see everybody. And I think it went a very good overall meeting, so.
Thank you. Good job, everyone.
You guys all did great. Nice work. It's I can't get over. It's so just nice to see everyone's faces. I hugged the laptop several times. Really well done, everyone. Really cool. And I am gonna call out Commissioner Mahoney and Commissioner Spears. Best lighting. I was hoping that you could send a picture of how you do it because I'm in the basement and I'm all artificial, and I'm freaking out. Like I have 10 different kinds of light bulbs and different locations and reflected light. Like I'm gonna get a degree after this of artificial lighting if I don't lose my mind.
Can you introduce yourself?
Sorry, oh, excuse me. Tim Heron, humble senior planner working under the basement and not afraid of muggles.
My last comment, Matthew Roman here, is that Brandon has made the most progress on a beard of anyone while in quarantine.
I got started early accidentally.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting then. So nice to see everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.